morning, Cascadia. You're listening to your community radio station, KBOO, Portland, Oregon, at 90.7 FM. Today is Friday, July 10th, 2009. And this is Air Cascadia. Long on content, short on time. I'm Chris Andre.
And I'm Liam Delta.
The Elliott Free State blockade morphs into a more public dimension.
Biomass. Bad for the forest and bad for you.
The Grover Norquist School of Edumacation gave rise to charter schools, the biggest, baddest stealth attack on the American mind yet. Is it time to rethink this?
Portland area weather, today mostly cloudy, high near 983, muggy in other words. Tonight, a chance of showers, possible thunderstorms. Tomorrow, mostly sunny, temperatures in the 80s, and then tomorrow night, showers.
And first we go to news from around Cascadia. Yesterday, the last four activists at Elliott Free State were arrested, including one who had rappelled down from a tree during the night and was later caught about 4 miles from the site. At any rate, that is the official Associated Press version. But the story continues, and the struggle continues to protect the last of Oregon's forests. My guest this morning is an activist and forest defender, Samantha Chirillo, with Cascadia Rising Tide. Good morning, Samantha, and thanks so much for being with us today.
Yes, spirits are high among our forest defenders today. They've held a 4-day blockade of the Uncas Ridge No. 2 Old Growth Timber Cell in the Elliott State Forest. This is the largest area of native forest remaining in Oregon's Coast Range. And this was the first blockage of logging activity on state lands in Oregon since the 1980s. Now, Roseburg Forest Products mentioned that it would consider selling the remainder of the sale back to the state, but the Oregon Department of Forestry presses for clear-cutting to restart, and ODF is required by law to sell the trees in the Elliott to generate revenue for schools. Timber companies are required to clear-cut the trees they buy, regardless of the market downturn, or else face a penalty. You know, as clear-cutting occurs across much of the Elliott this summer, we are going to run out of the forest that is providing revenue to these schools if we continue on this path. And that is really the reason for the blockade. There was also, we've lobbied elected officials, and we're also calling for a reinstatement of the timber harvest tax. It was canceled in 1999 for the largest timber landowners in Oregon, and that tax had been providing revenue to schools. So we want to be discouraging clear cutting rather than increasing logging to pay for schools.
And of course, there was a study out this week by Oregon State University, I believe, that concluded that forests were worth more standing than cut. And certainly no, in a down market, that has never been truer. We do have to take into account this insidious idea that biomass is going to save us from ourselves. So the plot thickens, and we will keep listeners informed. Can you give us an idea of what actions are taking place right now and how we can support the blockade?
Sure. We have a march today leaving from the Oregon Country Fair parking lot and heading to the Oregon Department of Forestry office in Vineta, Oregon, just west of Eugene. That march will be leaving at 4 o'clock sharp, going to the ODF office. And we ask citizens to contact key officials, ask them to respond to citizen input to end native forest logging in the Elliott and reinstate the timber harvest tax on the largest timberland owners. And I can give you some contacts here. The Secretary of State and Oregon Land Board member, Kate Brown, her number is 503-986-1523. And Kevin Weeks of the Oregon Department of Forestry, his contact is 503-945-7427.
Thank you so much. And, of course, if any listeners can or are interested in doing even more to support the effort, it's forestdefensenow.org. Have a look, and that's where you can do what you can to support the people who are putting their lives, literally putting their lives on the line to defend the forests that we all love and cherish so much. In fact, we need it for life itself. Thank you so much for that, Samantha. My guest has been Samantha Tirillo with Cascadia Rising Tide.
Thanks, Chris.
Portland Indie Media has this. Following its annual national gathering, the no-compromise group Cascadia Earth First, along with Cascadia Rising Tide, dropped a huge Dam Home Depot, Save Chile's Rivers banner at the corporation's Roseburg store. The groups are protesting Home Depot's buying of timber products from the Matt Group, which is involved in a proposal to build 5 big dams on 2 pristine rivers in Patagonia in southern Chile. The dams and their associated transmission lines would ruin the Baker and Pascua River systems, flood rare endangered forests, and destroy livelihoods.
And biomass, as we mentioned a moment ago, is the latest greenwashed wonder to hit the mainstream media. It sounds so good, so clean, so green, yet in reality, it's yet another environmental disaster of our own design. With me this morning to join in the debunking party is Rachel Smolker with Biofuel Watch. Good morning, Rachel.
Good morning.
Thanks so much for being with us. Biomass, out here in you're in Vermont, out here in Oregon, biomass is being touted as this green wonder that, you know, we're scouting around for renewable energy. Now we're going to use wood chips from sawmills. And where, pray tell, are we going to find the source of the wood chips? Oh, timber, clear cutting. Anyway, let's talk about biomass and why it's a bad idea.
Yeah, well, you know, it's really crazy, but, you know, on the one hand, we've come to recognize that deforestation is a huge contributing force to global warming. In fact, there's, you know, studies that just came out fairly recently from Australia that showed that the, you know, default values for carbon sequestration in forests have been horribly underestimated, which means that, you know, historically, the contribution of deforestation to the CO2 in the atmosphere is much greater than we ever realized before. So, you know, at the international level, we're engaged in discussions about RED, reducing emissions from deforestation and forest degradation, and trying to figure out how to encourage, especially developing countries, to lower their deforestation rates. On the other hand, the dog is eating its own tail because all sorts of incentives are being put in place to cut down forests and use them as, quote-unquote, renewable energy. And this is, you know, when I first got interested in following some of this, I was looking mostly at the refining of plants into transportation fuels, liquid transportation fuels. And, you know, that followed the corn ethanol discussions and debates and you know, the changing public opinion on that. And then, of course, this new salvation was going to be using cellulosic materials, the non-edible parts of plants. And then I started to realize, okay, this is trees and forests that we're talking about. And then,
where it
you
leads.
Know, the realization that actually we don't even need to, you know, turning wood into liquid transportation fuels is still not really something that people are doing commercially. We haven't really figured out how to do that very well. But what we can do really easily is burn stuff. And there's no impediment. There's no braking process in place as there is with the transportation fuels. When it comes to burning, all you have to do is just basically throw it in the burner and there you go. So, you know, generating electricity from burning wood chips is something that's taking off like crazy all over the place in Europe and also in the United States and elsewhere. People are co-firing wood chips and so on with coal, and then, of course, the utilities get to claim that they're reducing emissions. But let me tell you, the emissions from burning wood and biomass are actually higher than they are from burning coal for CO2. It actually releases more CO2 in the burning process than coal burning does. And yet they get to call it carbon neutral because they claim that when the trees regrow, they sequester the carbon that went up in smoke.
It's a huge greenwash, and out here in Oregon, that's what we're facing right now. Thank you so much. That's all the time that we actually have right now. I'd like to invite you back again in the very near future. Thank you so much for that.
Thanks for having me.
My guest this morning has been Rachel Smolker with Biofuel Watch, and be sure to go have a look at that website. It's all there.
Just a couple of days ago, the Oregonian had an article on the hazards of wood smoke pollution. In other words, pollution from biomass burning is the top cancer risk in Oregon's air, worse than Boardman, as Rachel was just saying. The EPA says burning wood and other organic material creates a greater risk than benzene, the carcinogen belched by cars and trucks in the tens of thousands of tons each year. So even if biomass weren't just a feeble excuse to keep chainsaws running, it would be a terrible idea.
Well, here it comes. Climate change sinks its teeth into Cascadia. The University of Washington says that Western Washington appears poised for an extremely dry summer. The most recent significant rain in most of the region was on May 19th. That's 46 days without rain and the driest on record. Northwest lowlands are some of the driest locations in the United States in July and August, and getting much, much drier.
Here's why America is losing the technology race and has long since become a third world economy, supplying the rest of the world with the last of its natural resources and an infinitely greedy market for products made overseas. A Chinese startup based in Eugene plans to make photovoltaic cells, solar panels, and sell them to Americans. Anyone else is welcome as well, of course, but it's still ironic as we slip deeper in debt to China and continue to lecture them on their coal-fired power plants.
Meanwhile, the Seattle area company hopes to build one of the world's largest solar power plants near Clallam in eastern Washington. Yesterday, Tainaway Solar Reserve announced plans for the 75-megawatt plant made up of 400,000 photovoltaic panels. That would be enough electricity to power 45,000 houses. Sad, isn't it, that a native Cascadia company couldn't be a vendor in the enterprise?
A permit to dump waste from a gold mine lake in Alaska has been approved by the U.S. Supreme Court. In a 6-3 vote, the court said the Ninth Circuit Ute Court of Appeals was wrong to block the permit. Environmentalists brought suit, saying that the waste will kill all the fish in the lake. The Ninth Circuit Court agreed, saying the dumping is barred by the Clean Water Act. The permit was issued in 2005 by the Army Corps of Engineers. Sounds like judicial activists.
Well, yes, no surprises there. Charter schools have been proliferating across Oregon with up to 95 online by next fall. So the competition has grown fierce between regular public schools and the charters for students and taxpayer dollars. Whatever else you can say about public schools, at least they teach kids how to get along with other people that they haven't chosen specifically to be with. In other words, people who might be different from themselves. It also teaches them how to learn, and how to cope with real-world social situations.
Whoa, the state has got a new head of the Oregon Board of Parole and Supervision. Outspoken Democratic State Senator Vicky Walker is quitting the legislature. Walker will resign her $21,000-a-year legislator job for the parole job, which pays $97,000. Walker and Kulongoski have had their political differences over the years. Kulongoski says he appointed Walker to the parole board because she understands the complexities of the criminal justice system and basic economics.
The state of Oregon and its largest union, the SEIU, are working out their differences over unpaid furlough. A major point of contention is a wage freeze proposed by Governor Ted Kulongoski. The union has agreed to freeze on cost of living increases, but wants the state to follow through on a step increase contained in the current contract. It's way more complicated than that, but that's all we have time for.
AIG has been quietly pushing for bonuses that total $2.4 million. Kenneth Feinberg, the federal compensation czar, is in charge of reviewing the bonus payments for 40 of AIG's highest-ranking employees. AIG has received more than $170 billion in taxpayer money and is 80% owned by the government.
And finally, this from the, you call that news department? Democrats have accused the CIA of repeatedly misleading Congress, while Republicans say it's all political posturing to protect Democratic House Speaker Nancy Pelosi. A CIA spokesman said it's not the agency's policy to mislead Congress, just everybody else, but not Congress. No, really.
This has been Headlines and Commentary from Air Cascadia for Friday, July 10th, 2009. Today's editor is Chris Andre. Engineering is Mike Hoffman. The KBOO Interim AM News and Public Affairs Director is Trillian Shannon, sitting in for Kathleen Stevenson, who's on sabbatical. I'm Liam Dalton.
Hello, Chris Andre. You're listening to member-supported KBOO Portland, your community radio station at 90.7 FM. Your support, and your support only, keeps us subverting the dominant paradigm. Thank you so much, members.
Coming up next on Flashpoint, CIA analyst Ray McGovern confronts the Bush torture issue in Texas, and Robert Jensen talks with Nora Barrows-Friedman about race, religion, privilege, and war.
Thanks for listening, and have a good day.